The perfect way to break a student is to...
Lucernia, president of the Malignant Witch and Warlock Society, was a little taken aback at Zadie's sudden appearance in her bedroom. The old hag with her lovely new body had appeared just as Lucernia was about to demonstrate for a group of teachers the latest means of breaking students. Zadie interrupted her, breaking her concentration.
All right, Lucernia, get everyone out!
What? Zadie, do you forget who I am?
I'm trying not to remember. Everyone out!
With a wave of her hand and a puff of smoke, Zadie returned all the other visitors to outside the apartment.
I've got business.
Dream on, Zadie. No one will serve you after your last debacle. You've been the laughingstock around the university since you let that uneducated bumpkin slice off your head and his brat keep you from reattaching it. Some grand witch you are. Even an apprentice could have done better.
Zadie gestured. And Lucernia choked on the resulting purple and green slashed cloud and became an ugly thing in a corner.
Very funny.
Lucernia gasped, finding that she had now become a pile of skin on the floor.
Lucernia, you look good without bones. Maybe you'd like to stay that way for a while. Say the next century.
What do you want, Zadie?
I want total victory, and I'm going to need the most accomplished of my former classmates. That includes you, which shows the lamentable lack of standards.
See, DeVale, he knows the alumni.
You're the president of the guild. DeVale doesn't keep up with the activities of the graduates. Some have gotten themselves burned. Others have gotten involved with, if you will excuse the word, benigns. I want the current best, and I will have them.
So you want me to pick?
And persuade, with the benefit of a little magic, if necessary. You do know magic, don't you?
Oh, very well. Change me back.
Zadie tossed a smoke that filled all Lucernia's senses and overcame her and brought her upright, boned out to her usual large proportions. Lucernia rubbed her wattled throat that a moment ago hadn't existed. There were several things she would have liked to do to Zadie that were malignant, but she knew her skill was inferior to that of the Grand Witch of Malignant Magic. Besides, even more than most of them, Zadie was teacher's nasty little pet.
All right, Zadie. I'll get your malignant practitioners for you. But you lost before. Do you really think that now you can win this time?
Yes, I am going to win.
With those words, Zadie vanished. Zadie materialized with a loud poof directly in front of Duval's big desk. She had perfected her appearance and disappearance until it would seem to mundanes that she had the magic opal. Duval looked up from his desk's viewing crystal. The horns on his head glinted in the overhead light.
Zadie, you have been doing well, but you will have to nullify that dragon. Have you given any thought as to how?
I planted an abundance of passion weeds for him and his mate. They're in and out of that little lake in dragon territory all the time. They won't notice a few unfamiliar plants. They can be locked in passion while I'm beating and destroying the Alliance. I can keep Kelvin from going there and spoiling their fun. Of course, Kelvin's brats can mind talk to it, but they have to be within range. The opal won't be of help to them if it's not used, and it will be one of my prime objectives to see that it's not.
After the battle, you'll have to destroy the dragon.
No problem there. I'll first reduce him to cowardice, and while he's cowering, I'll do an inside-out spell. Once the dragon's copper scales are on his inside and his gizzard and guts are on the outside, I'll take the opal.
You have it all planned, then. You won't expect me to break the rules and help.
Professor, I'm not going to need your help. With only Helba and an old hero to defend the Alliance, my victory is assured.
That's what I like to hear, Zadie. Confidence.
Kelvin felt foolish, standing in front of the recruitment house with the old witch on his back. Helba had pointed out that there was no reason why they should ride so far, when, with his Muvar boots, it was just a step. Helba slid off his back, carrying her familiar.
There. I'd say that was much better than flying.
Of course. She could have flown in bird form. Why didn't she? Am I just here to keep her company?
Grizzled and young faces were looking out the window at them. Someone must have seen their arrival. A middle-aged man completing one enormous step with a hag riding on his back. They walked in, and it was almost the same inside as it had been when Kelvin had come to buy mercenaries to fight Soana. There were tables and chairs, bottles and cards. In the corner, a gray-haired man with only one arm stood up.
Welcome, Helba. Welcome, Kelvin. I'm Commander Rora.
You know why we've come, Commander. You received Helba's message.
The commander nodded.
Came floating down from the ceiling. It's a neat trick. Captain McKay, my predecessor, used to get messages from a witch that way.
Ahem. We've business.
Yes, yes, I quite understand. I'm sorry that there wasn't some way for me to make an immediate reply. Please sit down. I have some information for you.
They took their chairs, sitting at a round table still damp with mug rings. The commander called to a man carrying a tray. The man wore a stained apron and had a scar across his face, but clearly, here, he was a waiter. He came over and put down mugs and poured an amber liquid that didn't quite smell like wine.
I never imbibe.
Katpa appeared uninterested. Kelvin picked up his mug, sniffed, then tasted.
No thanks.
Commander Rohrer drank, then wiped his mouth on his uniform sleeve. He fixed Helba with a gaze.
She was here, wasn't she, Commander?
Afraid she was, Helba. Wasn't my choice. She sent no advance message.
Typical. What did you do for her?
Personally, as little as possible. But she persuaded some men. She'll get her army.
And that will leave mine short?
Of men you're better off without. But there's more. Many men now say they won't serve the Alliance. It's the stories they've heard that the witch is now unbeatable.
We beat her once. That's why there's an Alliance.
Technically, you lost, since your side surrendered to the Orcs. As for Zadie, she may be better equipped this time. Magic is something no fighting man wants a chance.
I cut her head off. My son kicked it off a cliff, deflated her body, and unmagicked the girl who grew up to become his bride.
That's very commendable, Kelvin. The fact is that today, Zadie's back. This time she's not neglecting to hire mercenaries and buy war supplies. I'm sorry to tell you that my kingdom is more greedy and corrupt than others. They agreed to sell her all the war supplies they have. Catapults, war horses, armor, swords, lances, crossbows, a lot. They agreed to let her hire all who would take her gold. I'm even more sorry to tell you that there are more who will take her gold than those who won't. There are a few of us, a very few, who want to fight on the side of the Alliance. Gold isn't necessary. We'll fight by your sides for our lives. It's only a handful of us, but we will serve you, each of us, until our deaths.
Thank you, Commander. Your help is accepted. Come, Kelvin, we've got business with the Orcs.
But...
Kelvin started, then thought better of it. Helba knew better than he, prophecy or not. Helba, after all, had lived to see many wars over the centuries. Outside, Kelvin leaned over and waited while his passengers climbed on his back. He made certain Helba had a good hold, then took his long, long step. Brutalus was at the rebuilt land palace once destroyed by human brats. That had been a long, long time ago, and Merlane and Kings Kildim and Kildee had been helped into incredible mischief by Zadie. The children had actually gotten away with the magic opal Zadie had coveted, but the subsequent war had had a beneficial outcome. Today, the Orcs governed themselves through the Confederation under the Alliance. The Alliance itself had its figurehead ruler accepted by Orcs and humans alike, Horus, Keeper of the Opal. Kelvin stepped onto the sand where his two human children had once been. And Helba let go of his shoulders and slid off from his back. Brutalus, a fish-faced giant to them, was watching his grandchildren at play in the surf. The skin, if anything, seemed scalier and greener than Kelvin remembered.
Helmar, Kelvin, I got your message.
No protocol for orcs. They got down to business.
Brutalus, you're prepared to fight for the Alliance?
Of course. We have no choice. We're part of the Alliance.
You have trained warriors and equipment?
We're always prepared, Helmar. Orcs have their traditions to keep.
Your magicians?
Krasnos, our resident wizard. And for Nobly, my dear wife, are now reviewing spells.
You do know who Zadie is, don't you? She's more than just a witch.
We know. Once, she tried to use us to destroy the Confederation.
Have you heard that she now has powers greater than mine? Perhaps greater than Krasnos's and Fenobly's and mine combined?
Brutalus waited, his face as impassive as always.
Then there will be no pulling back? No leaving the Alliance?
Brutalus showed his dagger-like teeth.
Orcs do not surrender easily. Perhaps this time we will die, but if we are to die, we will die as orcs.
That's all I wish to know, Brutalus. There have been rumors, and I wanted to check on them myself. Inform Krasnos and Fenobly that I will have some witch and wizard allies as before, and that this time they will work with orcs against a common foe. Come, Kelvin.
But where are we?
The old palace ruins. You can wait there for my return. If Horus was available to us, I'd take him instead of the transporter.
The dragon still has the opal.
Yes, but he's newly mated in dragon territory and on his sunny moon. I don't want to interrupt until it's necessary. You know how dragons are. Bend down, Kelvin. You expect me to jump on your back?
Kelvin leaned forward and Helba almost, it seemed, did jump on his back. Once she was properly seated with Katba digging his claws in, Kelvin straightened and stepped. The old palace ruins, the very rocks and masonry that Kelvin's father had brought down years ago with his earth weapon, never seemed to change. Weeds and other vegetation didn't grow high here, possibly because of the hordes of tourists. Today being a work day, there were no tourists here. Kelvin waited while Helba changed herself into an ungainly swoosh.
Good luck, Helba!
Helba took off, and Kelvin watched her fly across the ruins and, he knew, down the ancient stairs along the river and then underwater to the air-filled dome with its transporter.
Well, Helba, Zadie's starting again, right?
Just as you told me, Whitestone. She grew a new body somewhere in dragon territory.
Reminds me of my greatest off-stage escape. I was set upon by malignants, dismembered, and my part suspended in a bag inside the rim of an active volcano. Well, my brain still functioned, so opening my mouth, I was able...
Not now, Zutini. Save it for those memoirs I know you're writing. We've got business. Helba's frame is facing peril of another sort.
Actually, it's the same sort, just as you predicted. She's going to stage a war so as to kill and damage as many humans and orcs as possible. Then she's going to get Kelvin and his relatives and me and everyone who helped us and...
No, Helba. We're not going to allow that to happen. Some of us have been planning ever since the convention.
Yes. Even if you hadn't our sympathy for what you endured at her hand, we'd still want to get Zadie. She never can pay for the insult she did to our convention.
And me?
Well, that goes without saying. You were the guest of honor. Zadie interrupted your speech.
Actually, she did quite a bit worse. The insult to Helba and the convention was great. But great as the insult was, she did still worse.
Yes, she tried to steal the opal.
No more than that. She tried to destroy Helba's home frame. The damaging of a frame world until it is malignant dominated cannot be tolerated.
Agreed. Oh, I quite agree.
Then you can get help. You can get some of the conventioneers who were with me before. It's going to be harder this time. I know she'll have practitioners of malignant magic with her. She'll attack the Alliance, but no one can say where. Precognition doesn't work for anybody these days.
Yes, that's a bad sign. But if bad comes to worse, escape is still possible. Even if your frame is taken over by her, you and your favorite humans may come here.
I don't want to escape with my favorite humans. I want to lick Zadie proper. I want her out of my existence and all existences. I want her to burn and make a complete ash of herself. I want the round ear of prophecy to stand up and be a hero.
Zudini and Whitestone exchanged pitying glances. They remembered how Kelvin had been tricked by Zadie all through the convention. Kelvin had, in effect, entrusted his children to her, though he hadn't known she had switched identities with his sister. Such mistakes were not treated forgivingly by those with more than a smattering of the art.
What we've done is contact all former convention members who were there. More than half have agreed to work to punish Zadie for the humiliation they suffered. And there are newcomers who have earned their pointed hats who have volunteered. Zudini's daughter Zali and her husband Frederick will come. Then there's a very young warlock named Ebernog who has developed a latent ability, along with his quick mastery of the art.
Yes, I have heard of Ebernog. Wizard Whitestone, Warlock Zudini, I appreciate what you've done, but now I have to be getting back. War may begin at any moment. Zadie may choose to attack anywhere, and I haven't troops and protective spells in Aratex and Hermandy.
Helba, we're coming with you. The others I mentioned will soon follow.
Come on, then. It's back to the transporter station, and then home to the Twin Palaces.
Not bothering to stand up, she changed into a swoosh in the chair, hopped into the air, beat her wings, and flew past startled waiters and waitresses. She flew through the hotel lobby and out the door, which the doorman just managed to open for them in time. Out in the street, they flew high above the floating platforms, past the shops and the police station, and into the familiar terminal. Straight to the nearest empty booth she flew, pecked the proper coordinates on the controls, and transported, not even bothering to change. The nanosecond of time that seemed to the traveler a longer time was no different for a bird than for a person. Cometing stars, twisting sensation in the stomach, an explosion of lights. Then she and Katba were back in the dome. Not wasting time, Elba dived out of the airlock, swimming for the surface with strong swoosh wing beats. Helba exploded from the water, circled just a moment in the air, and was joined by two ruffled swooshes bursting from the water. Together, side by side, they flew to the ancient dock, then elevated their bird selves above moldering stairs and the broken masonry and statues and junk of a one-time glorious palace. Now it was out to where the ruins ended, to where a plume of dust floated above a departing horse and rider. Kelvin was waiting here. He looked up at them, a little bit startled by their sudden appearance. Kelvin stood his ground while they landed and changed into their human forms. His expression a bit less confident than befitted a hero.
Helba, Whitestone, Zudini, something's happened. I've just received word. Hermandy and Aratex are under attack. The war has started.
It was hot on the battlefield. A different location than before, but almost the same situation as the last time Zadie had made war. The one big difference was that rather than a war between orcs and humans, it was a war of malignance against benigns, with humans and orcs expendable by both sides. Another difference was that both sides were better equipped, especially Zadie's. Kelvin stood feeling like a fool with the equipment Muvar had somehow given him throughout the years. He had on two belts, his sword belt and the belt holding his anti-magic weapon. On his hands were the gauntlets and on his feet the boots, his last gift from Muvar that made the levitation belt unnecessary. In his hands, but firmly in contact with the ground, was the Chimera's copper sting. He looked to Helba, who was staring out over the ground like a seasoned strategist. On her shoulder was Katba, the familiar.
Not yet, Kelvin. I'll tell you when.
I wish Horus was here.
Actually, if Horus had been present, Kelvin would have feared for him. Dragons were not among the most vulnerable of creatures, but they were as susceptible as humans to magic attack. Even with all the will he could muster, Kelvin doubted Helba could counter the spell Zadie would throw at Horus. The human army in dung-colored uniforms emblazoned with blood-red tridents began their advance. Zadie had somehow obtained both uniforms and men, probably through magic. General John Knight was conferring with St. Helens. Neither man had worn a uniform for well over 20 years. Now, looking at them from the relative safety of his ridge, Kelvin thought them both the very picture of professional soldiers. Both men were clad, as was he, in the grass-green uniforms bearing Helba's sun and moon symbol. His father, and undoubtedly St. Helens as well, would be wishing they had lasers and jetpacks instead of swords and horses. Now the two generals for the Alliance were riding in different directions, each to his own troops. In the meantime, the enemy was creeping forward. In the advance were men with swords, followed by men with bows and spears. Behind the light artillery were the wheeled catapults, already cocked and loaded and ready to move up. At the rear were witches and warlocks and major officers. At any moment, hostilities would begin. The Dung army's advance halted. The troops divided neatly, and the catapults rolled forward. Men chopped ropes with their swords and great rock missiles rose high into the air. Helba and her magic wielders acted as their green-clad troops charged out to meet the foe. The missiles became fireballs and exploded, showering the troops of both sides with white-hot pieces of rock.
Ah, my leg!
Some of the men fell. Others staggered and ran with flames on their backs. Kelvin wondered if he shouldn't have used the Chimera's sting. The Benign's tactics had hardly stopped the missiles, though they had kept them from exploding over the ridge. Now the witch's fire started in earnest, glowing balls of flame from Zadie's side that had to be countered and stopped by Helba's. Some of the fire got through, burning men and horses, striking and injuring and even destroying defenders. Return witch's fire went out, scoring some hits, but mostly being stopped by the defenses of the intended targets. Kelvin looked to Helba, and finally she nodded. Placing his hands on the Chimera's sting, Kelvin concentrated. And a great electric bolt shot out, drawn from the ground, and scored a hit among the witches. They were running with tattered, smoking clothes, putting each other out as best they could while fireballs continued. Kelvin tried another bolt, this time directed farther to the rear, hoping to strike Zadie. He had only a vague notion of where she might be. His bright blue bolt stopped before reaching its target and curled upward. A superior magic was stopping the natural force of nature. Kelvin swallowed, remembering that Zoanna had not been able to defend against the bolts. Yet Helba had warned him that Zadie would be watching for the sting to be used and would have developed a method of countering. As Kelvin's bolts curled back on themselves, he belatedly saw that there were large coppery shields floating where he had intended to strike. Of great size, the discs resembled saucers.
God damn it!
The shields were defending against the bolts at least as effectively as the invisible barriers were defending against the sizzling balls of witch's fire. In the meantime, the fighting was getting furious. Men were being killed out there, and Kelvin didn't like it. It wasn't just that warfare seemed to be a brutally inefficient way to settle differences, or that the bloodshed sickened him. Helba had warned him to stay out of the hand-to-hand combat, at least until Horus arrived.
Helba! I'm going out there!
No! You mustn't! You'll be her natural target! Zadie would use everything she has to capture you! Remember how she pulled you through the air?
Kelvin remembered all too well. She had pulled him out of a battle with the orc leader while he was wearing his levitation belt.
Well, maybe she's out of that spell!
And maybe you're out of sense! You see how strong her magic is? It's going to take everything we have to contain it!
But I want to do something! All this equipment, I can't do a thing!
Wait for Horus!
I don't want to wait for Horus! Damn! Can't you tell me to do anything?
Helba gestured offhandedly, and Kelvin suddenly found his lips were sealed. Helba shut him up in her fashion.
That's what she has for me to do? And me, a hero?
A boyish-faced, chubby young warlock was suddenly next to Helba.
Witch Helba! Witch Helba! Now, Witch Helba! Now, Ebonog! Kelvin, get ready with that sting! This may be a one-time chance!
Kelvin's hands were on the sting in bolting position. He hadn't the slightest idea what Ebonog was going to try. Ebonog rolled his boyish brown eyes back into his head until only the whites were showing. He placed his fingers against his forehead, and the color in his cheeks gradually vanished. Suddenly, the young man's eyes rolled down to where the pupils showed, now much smaller than they had been. The eyes glowed. Stabbed out across the battlefield, the floating shields above the enemy shot skywards. traveled away through the air and dropped.
Now, Kelvin, now!
Kelvin shot his bolt. The witches and warlocks he hit flamed and sizzled, and some were reduced first to skeletons and then piles of ash. It was like his taking of Zoanna all over again.
Keep it up, Kelvin! Keep it up!
Bolt after bolt sizzled. He got witches, warlocks, wizards, and ordinary mercenary fighting men. The flung-away discs crashed down onto catapults and onto enemy soldiers, inflicting more casualties. Helba was rapidly giving orders. She and her colleagues were throwing fireballs at a faster and faster pace. Ebernard dropped over, landing on his face. Kelvin hadn't seen what hit him, but something must have. Helba swiveled, her eyes darting left and right.
So, Helba, you would fight me, would you?
The voice was close. Helba flailed her arms and got red in the face.
Your protective spells aren't as good as you thought, are they, dearie?
Definitely it was Zadie's taunting voice. Kelvin could see finger marks on Helba's neck and knew that she was being throttled. A moment more and there would be no Helba to defend them, for once she dropped unconscious, Zadie would surely use witch's fire to destroy her. Kelvin's boots and gauntlets acted simultaneously without his help. The boots carried him forward. The gauntlets used his hands and muscles to wrench the sting from the ground, held it out, and swung it like a flail. The sting struck something invisible. Before Kelvin's eyes, the bare seat of a woman's anatomy appeared with a red, lurid line stretched across it. Now the gauntlets grasped the sting at its middle and base and started a fast upward drive. Kelvin closed his eyes. He didn't want to see what would happen when Zadie got what would have to be the severest sting of her witch's life. Mentally, he braced himself for the geyser of blood. Zadie would not only get the point, she'd be impaled on it. The sting struck nothing. Kelvin snapped open his eyes to see a serpent wriggling on the ground and to feel his body being pulled by his gauntlets as they took a different hold and used the sting as a spear. The sting darted, but the snake was suddenly a bird flying in midair. The gauntlets, not waiting for him to think of it himself, swung the butt down and made contact with the earth. The gauntlets moved up the shaft, positioning the tip to point at the wildly flying bird. Kelvin waited. His gauntlets tingled, a signal that usually meant danger.
Hurry!
Helba made croaking sounds, her eyes bugging at him. Her finger pointed sternly at the bird. Kelvin had to send the bolt out himself with his own mind. Kelvin wished up the bolt. But by then, the bird, achieving a remarkable flight speed, was out over the benign human army. If Kelvin released it now, his father or Lester or someone he knew might be struck. The bird was swooping low, deliberately keeping out of reach of thrust-up spears and swords, but too near to present a safe target. Kelvin did not dare to take the risk.
Hurry! She's getting away!
The bird was now darting down and then climbing up, momentarily concealed behind a horse, and then right in line with the horse's rider. Kelvin held his fire. The bird dipped down, then darted behind the shell of a burned-out house. Kelvin waited.
Shoot, Kelvin! What are you waiting for?
The bolt shot outward with a terrific crack. The house exploded in a fiery flash. Balls of witch fire scorched the grass immediately after. Helba made a quick sign and released Kelvin's lips.
Did we get her?
Thanks to your delaying, no. She had her cloak, and she had the instant she needed to become a woman and don it. You waited too long.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to harm the men. And then I didn't think of blasting the house. I was waiting to see her.
And then you'd probably have held your fire because she'd have been naked. Oh, I should have seen that coming. Zadie had her invisibility cloak and was waiting. What we really need now is some intelligence.
You mean spies? My children are telepaths. And who could possibly be better as spies? Perhaps they should be here instead of waiting for horrors? No, no, I would never forgive myself if they got hurt.
But Helba had read his expression.
Of course! Merlane, Charles, and Glint! Bring them here, Kelvin, and we've got our intelligence.
Kelvin concentrated on the twin palaces and the spot by the swimming pool and stepped. Behind him, he heard sizzling fireballs and felt a blush of heat on his back. Then he was stepping down into the courtyard and to the side of the pool. Merlane and Charles were there, having just stepped from the water. Glint seemed nowhere about.
Where is everyone?
Glint's gone to find Horace.
What? You know Helba asked him to stay?
He'll be back.
Where's your wife?
Charles shrugged. as might a man long accustomed to matrimony.
She's on the grounds, probably with Mom and Grandma. We stayed here waiting for Glint and Horace.
Grandma's never really seen the palaces. Then the royal Paynes were with her too, and you know how well Charles and I get on with the Paynes.
Paynes never miss a chance to show off. They can't do magic or read minds, so they make a big thing of pretending to know more about Helba's business. They'll be showing Mom and Grandma all her books and her paraphernalia for casting spells. All they've ever had to do with magic was getting born.
That's all any of you should have had to do with it. Where's John and her children?
They'll get here eventually, Dad.
You mean they're not here yet? Haven't you been searching for them?
Helba told us not to leave.
With your minds, haven't you tried to reach them?
Well, gee, Dad, we can't reach all the way out to their farm. You know how stubborn Aunt John is. She probably didn't want to come.
Kelvin felt like tearing out handfuls of his newly regrown hair. Sometimes it depressed him that for all their smarts and special abilities, his offspring demonstrated no more responsibility than had he and John. He had worried about them using their telepathy too much, and instead, they had used it too little. John paused after handing the heavy travel sack up to Alvin. The boy sat in his father's place on the front seat of the buggy as if he were already a man. She looked back at the house, wondering what she had left undone.
I have to go back inside. I've forgotten something.
Their carriage horse, old Hubbin, chose that moment to defecate, saying in effect what John's favorite and only husband would have said. Always impatient when younger, Lester was becoming more unmanageable every year. Their having had the children late in the marriage might account for some of it. Not that their children weren't darlings, but as Kelvin's father-in-law had said, they did try the patience of a saint. Many they encountered were not close to being saints, which made it that much worse. John walked back to their cottage, unlocked the door. Children weren't as trustworthy these days as they had been when she and Kelvin were brats, and went inside for the second time. She could imagine Lester fuming at her, and she wouldn't have blamed him. She tried all the windows and found she had remembered to lock all of them. What was it that had compelled her, like an aching tooth, to come back inside?
Hello, dearie. Remember me?
The voice came from nowhere. John flinched, but there was a vial of something under her nose. A fist hit her in the stomach and an ugly floating head with a lot of warts.
Sadie. Sadie with her invisibility cloak. I mustn't breathe.
But then she did, for she was gasping.
Well now, dearie, we're just going to change into birds and fly away from here. Won't that be fun?
Bluish powder rained on her from midair, and something rounded touched her cheek. A window unlocked itself and raised. John tried, but couldn't stop fluffing her feathers, then springing out the window and flapping her wings. Beside her flew an unusually ugly, dark swoosh. She was flying with Zadie, not willing it herself, but powerless to prevent it. Down below was the carriage and Hobbin and the children. Neither horse nor children looked up. As they flew across the fields and farms, only one thought sustained her. Zadie, perhaps remembering how John had escaped her at the convention, had chosen her and not her daughter on whom to enact first vengeance. Glint looked down at the greenery beneath his feet and manipulated the control on the belt with practiced fingers. Kelvin had shown him how to use the belt only yesterday and sworn him to secrecy before leaving it with him as a precaution. Helba would have disapproved, he knew, but Helba wasn't telepathic, and what the old witch didn't know could surely not hurt him. It had taken him all morning to reach dragon territory and then get up into the upper highlands. He landed now on a tall mountain and projected his thoughts.
Horace!
The answer came, but the thought was irritated rather than glad.
Glint, we're busy. Go away.
Horace, you have to take me home again, into that swimming pool at the palaces.
Go away, Glint. We're having our sunny moon.
I need him now, Ember.
I need him now, too.
And Merlaine needs me. Horace will come back to you.
Why was he arguing with her? Truly, there were things Glint hadn't learned about dragons. And to think that without his aid, Ember would have been a spinster.
Very well. Pest.
Horace was suddenly in front of him, crouched belly down.
Get on.
Glint climbed up on the coppery scales and settled down with a hand on either undersized dragon wing. He was thankful that Horus did not know about the belt. If Horus knew that Glint could return to Merlane without his help, he'd go back to what he'd been doing and redoing with Ember and ignore him.
Go, go, go!
Horus visualized the swimming pool at the Twin Palaces, and between one of Glint's goes and the next, they arrived. Glint emerged sputtering from the pool and grabbed Charles' extended hand. Glint's father-in-law was there, and now there was Merlane talking to the two Mrs. Knights and the two fiery-haired kinglets. Some of Horace's and Ember's passion must have stuck to him. He found he could hardly wait to be with his own wife.
Horus, you're going to have to help us.
Kelvin was coming rapidly with a quick step that had carried him all the way from inside the nearest palace.
The Alliance is in trouble, and now's the time to justify your title. You have to...
Later.
Glint doubted that Kelvin got the thought.
I'll help the Alliance later. I want to help my mate now.
Horus, are you listening to me? Horus, don't turn your head away from me! Horus!
The dragon vanished. Water rolled back into the spot Horus had recently occupied as waves rose quickly and splashed over the sides of the pool.
So much for putting too much confidence in a dragon. Kelvin obviously hasn't instilled parental discipline. If Merlane bears me a dragon, I'll be sure to teach it to obey.
Glint, you could fly with the belt, but I think it's best left here in the event of a sudden emergency. You didn't by chance teach Merlane.
I know how. We stayed in mental contact while he was flying. Until he got too far away.
Well, don't use it. Not unless I come back and tell you to. No going after Horus again until Helba gives me a spell to cool him down. There has to be something that will do it. I'll ask.
Goodbye, Daddy. I'll take good care of Mom and Grandma. Oh, and Auntie John and the niece and nephews. Glow can use the crystal if we need to reach Helba.
Fine. All right, Glint. Climb on my back.
Glint climbed onto Kelvin's back and settled. Kelvin took another step. Exploding fireballs dazzled the eyes and deafened the ears as Kelvin's boot soles made contact with the ground. Helba and the other witches and warlocks were still busy countering spells. The human army still fought as seemingly mindlessly as they had.
Glint, I want your help. Can you think out there and learn their plans?
You mean Mindsnoop? I can try. It's going to be hard because there's so many minds thinking at the top of their thoughts.
I don't want excuses. I want action.
Right.
Glint closed his eyes and sat down. Kelvin waited. Though Glint appeared simply to sleep, Kelvin knew that his mind was awake and moving outward. Glint reached out, entering minds at random, searching. It was like a mental maggot pile of unsavory thoughts coming at him wherever his mind sought to penetrate. He wanted not the minds of soldiers fighting in the field, but the officers and malignants who planned the strategy.
Gonna pull her down. Gonna rip off her clothes. Gonna throw her.
She's sending more phantoms. I hope they don't count
on. I hate magic.
When this fight is over, I'll have all the drink I want and a palace.
So much for the minds of superior officers. There has to be a warlock somewhere behind those officers. If I could just reach to that distant bridge and keep the minds separated, I might be able to find one.
So, after the vomit spell hits him on the left flank and the phantom giant storm through, we'll bring on the real giants.
Whoa, baby, surprised.
We'll mash them down into puddles and then we'll bring in more phantoms. Only these will be phantom dragons. Inside the phantoms will be armed fighters on war horses. Conceived to kill. It will be men inside the illusion doing the slaughtering. The old Tony dragon trick with new variations. Some of the phantoms won't just conceal fighters. No, they'll conceal warlocks with death wish powders and coward vapors. We'll decimate their entire force. Helva won't be able to keep up with it. We'll win with this tactic. And then there will be rewards aplenty as we go raping and torturing. Only the roundiers must be saved for Zadie.
The Grand Witch of Malignancy has plans for her enemies.
That's it. That's the information Helba wants.
The mind Glint was in blanked. He knew the Malignant had caught on to his presence and would be calling to Zadie. He had to withdraw his mind and take the information to Helba.
Oh, Kelvin, I hope you know what you're doing. I hope you really are the hero they always said. I don't know how long I can hang by these ropes without losing consciousness, but she will wake me only so I can see the slaughtering. Oh, Kelvin. Oh, Kelvin, don't let her get my children. Oh, the pain. The pain.
Kelvin's sister. She's here.
Glint's right cheek stung suddenly, and then his left.
Wake up! Wake up, Glint! She almost got you. If I hadn't seen the spell she was casting, she would have.
Glint opened his eyes to look into Helba's concerned face. What was the old witch talking about? Was it then all illusion? Had the thoughts of John Crumb been bogus?
Kelvin, your sister. Zadie's got her.
No!
Kelvin looked to Helba, his eyes searching hers.
It's true. Zadie had her before you got back from the Twin Palaces. Why didn't you hurry, Kelvin? I told you to.
But the hero's sickened expression was the only answer Glint knew she was ever going to get.
The orcs are coming! The orcs are coming!
The cry went up and down the lines. Kelvin looked up from his despondency, feeling a dim ray of hope. The orcs, he remembered, were reputed to be better versed in magic than Helba or any of her helpers. They were also strong and magnificent warriors. Helba greeted the orc wizard, distinguished by a darker-than-usual green face.
Krasnos, it's good to see you again.
Krasnos opened and shut his gills once, an orc acknowledgement. Like all orcs, Krasnos could breathe perfectly with the lungs nature had given him, but underwater, he changed over to gills. Nature had been more generous with orcs than with other creatures in that respect.
Krasnos, I hope you've tricks the rest of us haven't thought of. Our defenses are strained already. What magical strategies do you suggest?
Strengthen the defense barriers.
Helba frowned.
I know you orcs are stronger in every way than the rest of us, but can you really...
Krasnos raised his webbed fingers, and above them, a fireball that had gotten through their barrier detonated. Now a faint glimmer appeared, showing where the orc had made a superior magical barrier or wall to halt further fireballs.
Well, Krasnos, that is impressive, and I'm sure it will help. But we were hoping you orcs would have attack plans. What do you think our army should do?
Get out of our way! The orc army will handle these puny invaders.
Helba looked crestfallen. Kelvin sympathized with her. The orc wizard was not only disparaging their magic as weak, but also their army. Remembering how it had been 20 years ago, Kelvin had the feeling that quite possibly the orcs might be strong enough. 20 years ago, the combined might of the Confederation had not been enough to turn back or defeat the orcs. Krasnos, the orc leader, came forward. To see a band of orcs grouped together was almost like looking at a grove of trees. When one of them moved away, it had to be startling.
Helba, Roundir, my orc army is about to launch its attacks. As my warriors march out, have yours fall back.
As backup?
No, to keep safe. When an orc warrior swings his sword, he cuts a wide swath. Swords and clubs often do not distinguish between friend and foe, especially in the heat of battle.
Oh. Helba relayed the orc messages to the generals via crystal. The orcs marched on and in great strides. No horses for orcs, since an orc was far bigger than even the largest warhorse. Each orc had a large, knobby club swung over his scaly shoulder. Each carried an unsheathed sword the length of three men in his right hand and a shield the size of a rowboat in his left.
They're like marching trees. When will Horus come to his senses? Sooner or later, I'm going to have to look for him. Drag him back by the tail if necessary. Mating might be a delight for dragons just as it could be for humans, but Horus has a responsibility. If the orcs had the opal now, I have a feeling Zadie's forces would be running in the other direction.
At that moment, a dragon came charging down the hill behind the dungclads.
Horus! He's come to help!
But it wasn't Horus. This dragon was bright gold in the sunlight and had large, sword-like teeth even bigger than Horus's. Kelvin shivered as the beast displayed the teeth and emitted a roar that was freezing to all who heard. The dragon charged through the fighting men, ignoring the human fighters, but slashing with claw, snapping with teeth, lashing with tail every orc within reach. It was a formidably large dragon, and repeated sword thrusts did nothing to stop it. Time after time, an orc's oversized sword swung right through the golden scales. Kelvin wondered that the beast showed no wounds and emitted no cries of pain. A second dragon came to join the first, then a third dragon, a fourth, and a fifth. Now the dung-uniformed giants were fighting between and at the sides of the dragons, and everywhere the dragons scuttled, orcs were flung dead and dying to either side.
Now, Fenobly!
Fenobly raised her hands and made a downward sweep. Instantly, a wind blew. It tore the dragons to shreds, exposing the wizards and warlocks and fighters who had been their magic guts.
Kelvin, even with Fenobly's magic, we can't withstand these attacks much longer. You must get Horus, or if not Horus, the Opal. Go immediately, it's our only chance.
I'll try, Helba.
Kelvin turned and took a long, long step. As before, he heard imploding fireballs and felt heat singe his back, and then a blur of green and brown continuing on, and then his foot coming down to rest. Kelvin stood dizzily, hearing a dragon roar. He was at the spot where he and John had been when they had first adventured. But now was not the time for reminiscences. Hastily, Kelvin sidestepped a golden dragon's maddening charge. He took a sight on a distant peak and stepped there. Clouds floated by on either side as Kelvin's dizziness returned and his lungs fought to adjust to the height.
So, now where is Horus? That ledge over there. Could that be the one Glint had talked about? Oh, I wish that I'd paid more attention.
Kelvin stepped again. Merlaine sat between Charles and Grandma Knight watching the faraway battle. It was almost too much to bear, all this killing. She and Charles and the Royal Paynes had seen similar things when they were children, and then not in crystals. They had lain in the woods, fire all around, watching a soldier die. They had seen with wide, scared eyes dying horses and men. There had to be a different way, she had thought then, and thought so now. Merlaine thought to her brother. Carefully, she did not look at her grandmother or the Royal Paynes.
Charles, I think one of us should go to get Horus.
Charles' eyes remained on the action. Fireballs were zooming again. Thanks to the orc witch, the Alliance had their defense. It was a standoff. But those advancing dung-clads with the copper discs levitated above their heads appeared ominous. Merlaine hoped her father had that handled. Charles moved his eyes sideways to check. Kildim and Kildee, as if responding to a cue, were bringing fresh glasses of lemonade and a big bowl of magically popped core beans. They sat there now, stuffing themselves, smearing butchon over their faces with every crunch. They watched first one crystal and then another, focusing on the killing. In theory, they were studying strategy, but in fact, they were enjoying the excitement.
What do you want me to do, Merlaine? Besides, your husband tried that.
But it's me Horus will listen to. He won't say no to me, Charles.
So how will you do it?
Take the belt. You know I can use it as well as Glint. I can be over in dragon territory and to the right place before you know it. I'll take the belt out of the cupboard and pretend I'm going to the privy. Once I'm outside, I'm gone.
You just want me to sit here and pretend I don't know?
Yes. All you have to do is keep your mouth shut. Grandma won't think about me being gone for a while. If she does mention it, tell her I went for a swim. She won't be suspicious.
All right, if you're gonna go, go now.
Merlaine stood up and made a point of stretching. She started out to the kitchen, where she intended to grab the belt out of the cupboard and dart out the back door.
Where are you going, Merlaine?
Out.
Going to swim?
Maybe later.
I'm coming with you.
No, I'll be right back.
She went on, knowing that she would not be followed. What was it in boys, their physical age, that made them so crude? Of course, Kildim and Kildy had been crude and bothersome enough when younger.